Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicing with new topics every single week and jamming you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are fresh off of UFC Des Moines. I was unable to watch it, but I was able to go through, catch the replays of everything, basically get a good analysis of everything that went down from every single matchup on the fight card. So we're going to be going through all the fights and talking about them and what could be next for each and every one of the fighters. We did go 7-5. On predictions, and we missed on some picks, right? Just some kicking myself over. So, well, we have lots to talk about in that regard. Also, going to talk about the NBA and their updated standings. As we all know, there are now only two teams that have not made it to the second round. So, we're going to talk about that matchup as well. So, lots of stuff in the NBA and the UFC. It'll be on today's episode, guys. We're getting to the end game. The end game of college is officially upon us. Actually, this is the third act of the movie. Let me just tell you, I graduate in 5 freaking days. Insane. Utterly insane, but I'm just so blessed and so happy for everything that I've experienced here at college. I could not be more happy. And as I go into this next chapter of my life, I'm just excited to be taking all of my fellow podcast listeners with me. Oh, how joyous I know. So let's not delay. Let's get right on into everything with, of course, first, there is no new UFC fights. I have no new UFC fights to tell you all about. So, unlike, I guess, usually, we are going to be talking about the NBA to start out. And since we've last spoken, there have been some teams that have advanced. And the only two teams that haven't advanced are the Rockets and Warriors. And today, Sunday, May 4th, they will have Game 7 in Houston. I'm excited, you know. I've predicted every single playoff matchup correctly. And if the Warriors win, I will have gone 8-for-8, which would be pretty insane if you ask me. Now, as the winner of this will play the Timberwolves, who did 4-1 beat the Lakers. You already know. They were saying Lakers in 5. It was Wolves in 5. What can I say? But I would honestly like to, I would prefer to play the Rockets, if I'm being honest. If I'm the Timberwolves, I would prefer to play the Rockets. Now, if we do play the Warriors, we do get home court advantage. So there's kind of some pluses and minuses there. But if it's up to me, I'm picking the Warriors to beat the Rockets and play the Timberwolves, which, as we all know, Timberwolves, Anthony Edwards, absolute stud. Julius Randle playing amazing as well in the postseason. I'm so excited to see who the Timberwolves end up playing. Honestly, I got Wolves winning the cup. What can I say? Other matchups in the West, the Clippers push it to a Game 7, but it's the Nuggets winning 120-101 to send the Clippers home, and Russell Westbrook was talking so much trash. I loved it. And of course, they'll be taking on the Oklahoma City Thunder, and Russ already knocked off the Clippers, who cut him, and he's probably going to try and knock out the Thunder, which I really hope. So if there's anyone that can beat this Thunder team, I really truly believe it's this Nuggets team. This matchup is just kind of tough. Nikola Jokic, triple-double machine, as always. That's going to be a legendary matchup, but it's insane to think. Thunder, Nuggets, Timberwolves, one of those three teams, and the winner of the Warriors and Rockets will be in the NBA Finals. I'll say the teams that no one is really thinking is going to make it is probably the Rockets. No one really has the Rockets, so if they can improbably beat the Warriors and probably beat the Timberwolves and then probably beat either the Thunder or the Nuggets, yeah, this Rockets team would be insane, but I think they're a fake 2-seed. I don't think they're as good as people say they are for being a 2-seed. Now, on the Eastern side of things, I mean, you get Game 1's coming at you the next 2 days. You know, Pacers and Cavs, they'll be doing battle. Knicks and Celtics, you got the, it's just those two. Oh, yeah, it's just Pacers and Cavs and Knicks and Celtics. Oh, I'm such a fool. But, yeah, all those predicted correctly. No upsets there. Pistons made it close. They were out to a Game 6, but Knicks managed to win in just a fantastic Game 6, I'll say. 116-113. Truly a great game there. Celtics, I mean, Magic were able to steal one game. That's that. The Bucks and Pacers series, that ending to Game 5 was insane. But Tyrese Halliburton and his daddy moving on to the next round. And, you know, as for the Cavaliers, I mean, they destroyed the Heat. They truly a number one seed that looks dominant. I can believe any matchup. You know, I could believe any of these teams making it to the NBA championship and honestly winning it. Pacers would be a shocker just because, you know, the Pacers just haven't historically been good. But this Cavaliers team is so well-rounded. They're so good. The Celtics, obviously, their team chem. They're the reigning defending champs. They're who you should look out for. And as for the Knicks, they were able to beat the Pistons. Bad boy Pistons, you know, making it close at the end. But they really need to get over the Celtics. The Celtics hump, and if they can, they'll be super, super set up for the future. Now they got Karl-Anthony Towns in the team now. All right, you got a star-studded Josh Hart, who has truly came into himself. We don't even need to talk about how good Jalen Brunson is. You know, this Knicks team is better than last year, in my opinion. And I'm just going to be interested to see how this series goes. You know, if I'm making my series predictions, I obviously have for the West, the Timberwolves and Nuggets, Timberwolves making it and winning it. But for this East, you know, it's hard for me to see the Pacers and Knicks winning. You know, it's just so easy to go with Cavs, Celtics making it. But I will say, I think the Pacers are going to shock a lot of people. Maybe take this to a Game 7. It's just, I was more confident the Pacers playing, you know, I was more confident the Pacers making it to the Eastern Conference Finals before I saw what the Cavaliers did to the Heat. So it's just really tricky what we're going to do with all this. You know, the Knicks, Celtics, I'm probably just going to stick with my Celtics pick. And Pacers and Cavs, I don't even hate the Cavs, but it's just fun to root for Tyrese Haliburton. I just love that the Kings gave away and he's just become one of the best players in the league over in Indianapolis. So we'll leave all that to be in terms of the NBA. And I wasn't gonna actually bring it up, but I do want to actually talk about the NHL briefly, as they're kind of in a similar boat for their games. Blues and Jets, they'll be playing today to see who will advance to the next round. But Panthers, Maple Leafs, you know, Panthers win the Battle of Florida, knock out the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa Bay Lightning really had nothing going for them. Like, honestly, 4-1, like, Lightning did absolutely awful in that series. And they'll be taking on the where are they at? They'll be taking on the Maple Leafs, who, you know, 4-2 beat the Senators to 6 games. And I will say the Senators proved a bit tougher than anticipated as we got into those game 4, 5, and 6. But Maple Leafs got done, did what they needed to do. Incredible stuff from them. Elsewhere in the East, of course, you're going to get the Capitals taking on the Hurricanes. That is a fantastic series. That is a fantastic series. You know, both of these teams winning 4-1. Devil's game, insane for the Hurricanes. As for the Canadiens, they never really had anything for the Capitals. I could believe any of these teams making it. But after what I've seen in round one, I'm going to go with the Capitals and the Panthers to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, or the whatever they call it, the Eastern Conference Championship in the NHL. Now, I would like to see Maple Leafs and Capitals. That would be my favorite scenario. But yeah, we'll have to see. Hurricanes, though, not sleep on them. If they knock off the Capitals, I would not be surprised. But the East is very interesting. In the West, the Golden Knights beat the Wild in 6. Very depressing. Very depressing for the Wild. Just another year, another chance that they fail at. So Golden Knights advance to no one's real surprise. I'm not too surprised. Now, as for who they be playing, they're playing the Oilers. That is right. Oilers are able to beat the Kings in 6 games. Amazing work for them. And it was a good win. Good win for them. 6-4 in game 6. So you're going to be seeing Oilers trying to return, trying to make it back to the Cup. I do like their odds against the Golden Knights, but it's just tough to tell if the Golden Knights were good or the Wild were bad. So we'll see how they play against the Oilers, but it is a fun matchup. Now, as for quite possibly one of the greatest Game 7s we've ever seen, Stars beat the Avalanche 4-2 in just one of the most shocking things we've ever seen. So Avalanche are up 2-0. They lead the entire game. The final 12 minutes, the Stars score 4 goals and win. Insane. This Dallas Stars team comes in the playoffs, 7-game losing streak. They go down 2-0, and then they just find a way to move to win this in Game 7. Incredible stuff for the Dallas Stars. And honestly, I like their odds against the Blues or Jets. I really do. I really like the Stars' chances against the Blues or Jets. I think the Blues and Jets have absolutely torn each other apart. And for this Stars team, they're just going to be coming in with so much momentum. I would actually really love, I picked the Jets to advance, but if the Blues win and then it's a Blues-Stars and the winner of that goes to the Western Conference Championship, oh, that'd be so good. So we'll see what happens tonight. Gonna stick with the Jets, but the Blues, they're kind of like a little underdog run here in the postseason. I'll be interested to see what happens. But yeah, that's your little NBA and I guess NHL rundown. We'll do this every once a week or so. And, you know, obviously when we could go on our little trip coming up, we're gonna have to give it like a week's break or something. But let's talk about what I've been dying to talk about this whole time, and that is UFC Des Moines. So we got things going on UFC Des Moines. Of course, a little women's flyweight action. Juliana Miller back after 3 years, taking on Ivana Petrovic, and quite possibly you could cut both of these women. You could cut both of them. Just a boring fight. Just no technicality. Just, I mean, 29-28 across the board for Juliana Miller. She, you know, told us from the fight, 25 significant strikes to 22. I mean, 3 of 9 on takedowns for Julian Miller, 8 minutes of control time, 1 of 5 for Ivana, 2 minutes, 47 seconds. Like, these two are just amateurs. They're going to get eaten alive in this league. Julian Miller improves the 5-3. She's 2-2 in the UFC. I don't even know who to give her. Like, I don't know if we feed her to an up-and-comer, if we ever fight another irrelevant, you know, woman's strawweight, but just nothing. Just nothing. As for Ivana Petrovic, you know, this is now 1-3 in the UFC. Back-to-back boring decisions, send her to regional MMA. Get her out of here. I have no sympathy for this, honestly. It was boring, it wasn't it, and they didn't even have a highlight, really. And I'm looking like, where are the highlights? If we're going on Twitter, everyone's like, get cut both of these women. So, tough start to the card, but, I mean, you could say, like, oh, we still needed to see this fight. Did we need to see this fight? I honestly don't think we did. I think we could have done without having Julian Miller take on Ivana Petrovic. Nonetheless, it happened, and we shall progress. Because after that, Thomas Peterson took on Dontell Mays and proceeded to put on the craziest grappling thing I've experienced, I think I've ever watched. It was utterly wild. Thomas Peterson, 29 Stephen strikes to 3, 105 total strikes to 13, 30 26s. On 2 judges' scorecards and a 30-25, 9 of 9 on takedowns for 13 minutes and 49 seconds. Thomas Peterson showing us how to grapple. Thomas Peterson taking us to grappling class. Showing us how to do it, Thomas Peterson. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. That's all I got to say to that. All I got to say to that, because just insane. I mean, Dontell Mays landed one significant strike every round, taken down 3 times in round 1, twice in round 2, and 4 times in round 3. It was embarrassing. So Dontell Mays, you could say see you later to his UFC career, a little three fight losing streak, 1-4 in his last 5. Yeah, Dontell Mays has gotta go. Very rough stuff from Dontell Mays. They're not even keeping him to be a pawn for someone coming off a Day 1's contender series. He gotta go. Thomas Peterson gets his 10th career win. Good job to Thomas. You know, he's gone win-loss since coming into the UFC, and now he's got a win. So good for him. And we'll see what's next for him. I mean, when you just go out there and grapple, like, relentlessly, it doesn't leave much to be desired, but we can always find some heavyweight fighter for him to fight. I don't really know if he's ready for a ranked opponent, but there's always your Hanata Dinez's of the world out there. I'm trying to think, who has he taken on? He's lost to Jamal Pokes and Shamil Gaziev. There is unranked heavyweights out there. I think Hanata Dinez could be a fun matchup. And you also have Ryan Spann, even. You can have him take him on. Walter Cortez Acosta might be fighting up. I don't know. Thomas Peterson will stick around, but I mean, I know I was big on grappling, but still, 9 of 9 on takedowns. Like, Dontell Mays, you are not cut out for the UFC anymore. Following that matchup, we dropped down to bantamweight, and we had our first performance bonus of the night, and my bad, Quang Bang Lee, you can frickin' fight. Quang Lee submits Gaston Bolanos in round number 2 with a rear naked choke, getting his 4th career submission, 6th career finish. Good work for Quang Lee. Gaston, I thought he was better than he was. Clearly not. Quang Lee will improve to 9-2. He's back in the win column, and he's 50K richer. I actually am pretty happy for him. Good for you. Good for you, Quang Bang Lee. As for Gaston, he is now 2-2 in the UFC, and with an 8-5 record, I would probably cut him. He is just not appetizing in the slightest. I mean, we could have him match up with who we're going to talk about in another bantamweight matchup when we get to the main card, but honestly, I could do without him. Now for Quang Lee, I actually think the perfect matchup next for him is someone we're going to match up on the main card with. So we're going to talk about another bantamweight matchup, and I think that the winner and loser of these should fight each other in verse. But great win for Quang Lee. I mean, it was pretty much game plan from the start. Get the takedowns. 10 significant strikes to 5 in favor of Quang Lee. He goes 4 of 7 on takedowns for 5 minutes and 46 seconds of control time. So in an 8-minute fight, he all but controlled 80% of it. Great stuff for Quang Lee. Repping Minnesota. Minnesota boys going 2-0, and I only picked one of them. I feel sad. I'm so sorry, Quang Lee. Next time, I will not undermine you. Next matchup. Here we go. Woman's straw weight action. You had Jillian Robertson and Marina Rodriguez, and Jillian catching me off guard. You know, I knew she would win. I never doubted it, but the fact she goes out and gets a TKO, amazing work. Round 2 TKO for Jillian Robertson. Just mauls Marina. Just mauls her, and oh, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't pretty. It wasn't pretty. I mean, it's just your run-of-the-mill Jillian Lanzer takedowns on Rita Rodriguez, who still, in her illustrious career, was never able to figure out how to stop takedowns. So Jen Robertson will move from 12 to 9 in the women's strawweight action. As for Marina, she retired in the octagon, which sucks, man. Marina Rodriguez is going to hurt. It's going to hurt. There was at one point, she was on a four-fight win streak. She should have fought for the belt. She should have fought for the belt and instead takes a fight with Amanda Lemos, gets, you know, just kind of blitzed and gets TKO'd. I thought it was too early. Then takes on Vera Jandidoba, and that was when it was really exposed. She has no grappling. Picked up a massive win over Michelle Warson Gomez. Everyone's like, oh, she's back. And then loses to Jessica Andrade by split decision. Then Yasmin Lucindo by split decision. Now gets mauled by Jillian. Tough ending to a career of Marina Rodriguez, but she was always so good. She'd beat any unranked woman out there. Let me tell you that right now. Good career for Marina Rodriguez, but 9 years younger, Jillian Robertson was just too freaking much. And the Savage, don't blink, 4-fight winning streak, second TKO finish. Yeah, she's in the top 10. Happy to see it, Jillian Robertson. Kind of sucks that she can't fight in Canada next week, but oh well, is what it is. She's going to be ranked number 9. I don't really know who to match her up with. You got Amanda Ribas at 7, Mackenzie Dern at 6, Jessica Andrade at 4. You obviously got Amanda Lemos at 4, Tatiana Suarez at 2. There's just an unlimited range of fights that we can make. It's kind of exciting. It's up to me, Yan Chayonin or Amanda Lemos. I would give her a top 5 opponent. I think she's ready. I think she's deserving. She's a new face in a division where we've kind of just gotten old. You know, Virna Jandidova, Tatiana Suarez, Yan Chayonin, Amanda Lemos, Jessica Andrade, Mackenzie Dern. These are names we've been seeing the last 3 to 4 years. I'm ready to see a little Jillian Robertson mix up. So Marina, good UFC career, a lot of tough decisions that you had to deal with, and, you know, just never learned the grappling. But Jillian Robertson, the night belongs to you. Excellent work. She was a minus 300 favorite for a reason. After that, I mean, I knew he was good, but he is as legit as they come. Azamat Bekov runs through Ryan Loader, and yet another example of why we probably should get away from the Ultimate Fighter or bring in actually, like, really good fighters for the Ultimate Fighter, because Ryan Loader is just clearly not ready for the UFC, and especially for someone of Azamat Bekov, who, you know, 29 years old, coming from Russia, now on an 8-fight winning streak, gets his 16th career finish, 8th career knockout. This is now 16 of his 20 wins by finish, and he's 20-3. 2-0 in the UFC with 2 round 1 TKOs. Yeah, and he gets a performance bonus. Domination. Domination from start to finish for Azamat Bekov. As for Ryan Loader, this ends his 5-fight winning streak and is actually, I think, the first time he's ever been finished, oddly enough. So tough stuff for Ryan Loader. I can't even lie. I don't even know what to do with him. 8-2. He's 33. I don't know. There's maybe a middleweight out there. How about Bo Nickel? How about Ryan Loader could take on Bo Nickel? There's your next matchup for you. You're welcome. You're welcome, everyone. But Azamat Bekov, what a killer. What a killer. You can just feel the power in his punches. And 22 cinnamon strikes at 13, landed 2 knockdowns. It was impressive. I was really impressed with what I saw from Azamat Bekov. I'm ready to see this guy take on someone legit next time up. You know, I don't know if the rankings are in his future, but a Michelle Pereira, that's a name I would love to see. Chris Curtis could be a fun name. Kelvin Gastelum, Paulo Costa. Like, I don't know the ceiling for Azamat Bekov. You know, he's not 6 foot. He's not a tall middleweight, but he's still pretty decently sized. I mean, he's got some muscle on him, some guns. He's getting knockouts in round one. Love to see it. Azamat Bekov, deadly as ever, and really waking everybody up. You know, after the two doozies to start the card, we went on this little stretch of just banger fights, and it was going good. And then, you know, women's bantamweight action, Yana Santos, Misha Tate. Really wish I was stuck with my Yana Santos pick. Really, that one bugs me, you know. Quang Lee, I didn't pick him from Minnesota. Juliana Miller, I never gave her a chance. But just, you know, I changed it last minute to Misha Tate, and I regret it. Yana Santos gets the win. She'll remain ranked at number 10. As for Misha Tate at 12, I mean, she should retire. I don't know what she's fighting for, but judges' scorecards 29-28 across the way. You know, Yana wins rounds 1 and 2, and then Misha Tate wins round 3. So it always leaves a weird impression on our minds. But yeah, this fight happened. Yana Santos, good for you. You're now on a little 2-fight winning streak, I think. Isn't she on a little 2-fight winning streak? You know, the wife of Thiago Santos, 2-fight winning streak, 2 decisions. She's 16-8. I mean, I guess she can make a run for the belt. 35, you have strung together some wins. So what can we do next with her? How about Mayra Bueno Silva at 7, Irene Aldana at 6, and the highest I will go, maybe Caitlin Vera at 3? We'll have to see, but hey, Yana Santos, going to be fighting up. As for Misha Tate, she's 38 there is no reason she should still be fighting Miesha Tate. If you stay, you'll have to take on Jocelyn Edwards or Nora Quinole. If you leave, no one will blame you. You can retire again. All is okay. But yeah, just a doozy. No action, just run-of-the-mill, striking, got takedown in round three. Yeah, that'll do it. But yeah, good win for Yada Santos. Gotta give it to her. Really gotta give it to her. Excellent work. Then with that, we dove into the main card, ladies and gentlemen. We dove into the main card, and we kick things off. Mason Jones, Jeremy Stephens, and from what I heard from everyone, this was probably the best fight of the evening. It really picked up in round two. But, you know, Mason Jones shuts down Jeremy. 30-27s across the board. 81 significant strikes to the 42 in favor of Mason Jones. 104 total strikes to 54. 8 of 12 on takedowns for 6 minutes of control time. So I do want to say to that is that Jeremy was getting up, but he just couldn't do it. You know, round 1, 39 significant strikes to 21. Round 2, 37 significant strikes to 19. These boys were throwing down and eating shots. But by round 3, Jeremy was just done, and Mason just went to the takedowns and got five of those 8 round 3 for 4.5 minutes of control time. So Mason Jones, I mean, he's back, guys. He's back. 5-fight winning streak now, knocks off Jeremy Stephens. I don't know if Jeremy retired. I would hope he did, but, you know, Jeremy Stephens is 38. So it was cool that he got to fight in front of Des Moines, where he was born. But, I mean, other than that, didn't really offer much. Mason Jones, just younger by 8 years, doing what he has to. So Mason Jones back in it, getting a win, lightweight division. I don't know. There's a lot of options for him at lightweight. I don't think we're going to give him a ranked opponent, but there's always some names out there that I would be intrigued for him to fight. Let me actually go to my favorite MMA page. If you are ever in need of a good MMA page, go to MMA Theory on Instagram. They always post the best matchups for who they should have people take on next. And he suggested Elvis Brenner. I really like an Elvis Brenner matchup. There's a lot of fun lightweight action that could be going on. But yeah, I like that one. I saw that one earlier and I was like, you know what? Let me give a little shout out to MMA Theory. Always giving us the greatest fight predictions on the app. So Elvis Brenner could be a fun option. There's always your guys like, who's from the mountains? Who's from the mountains? Elvis Brenner lost to him. Oh my gosh, what's his name? It's like, oh, Mytebek. Mytebek Orobai. Yes, that could be another option for Mason Jones. But hey, Mason, made it back to the UFC. Great work, Jeremy. Just go retire. You don't need to fight anymore in the UFC. You have had a great time so far. After that, bantamweight action, Sir Ace Today and Cameron Smotherman. And look, these guys both will match up with Quang Lee and Gaston Bolanos. Cameron Smotherman just came in, you know, 29-28, 29-28, and 30-27. Just couldn't really deal with the takedowns. Kind of seemed like a one-and-done fighter, if you ask me. Both men, the 58 significant strikes, 55 in favor of Cameron Smotherman. 5 of 12 on takedowns for Sir Hayes today is what won him the fight. Now, if it was up to me, I honestly had Sir Hayes winning round 2, 1 and 2, and if we were going to give him a round, Cameron Smotherman would have won one round 3, but it wasn't anything of too much excitement, perchance. So this does snap Cameron's 4-fight winning streak. He's now 1-1 in the UFC. He also lost in the Namus Contender Series. I just don't think he's the babyface killer. That's his nickname, cool nickname, but it's just not much to give me. So him and Gaston Bolanos can take on each other, and the loser can leave, and the winner can stay in the UFC. Now, as for Sir Hayes today, I mean, I've known this guy's good. 2-fight winning streak now. Him and Ramon Tavares had some fun fights. He's 12-2, and I think him versus Quang Lee would be fun. Because really, both guys can strike, both guys can grapple. They don't excel in one thing over the other. And seeing career trajectory-wise where they match up after they fight, I would love to see that. So it's so easy to matchmake when people fight on the same card. Let's do that one next. And we stuck with the bantamweights. I mean, it was a bantamweight night as we had Montel Jackson and Daniel Marcos. Now, this fight wasn't exciting. I will say it was kind of a doozy. Now, don't get me wrong, the final 3 fights of the night all picked up, but this was like the kind of the last doozy. It was just so satisfying watching Montel win, because I knew Daniel Marcos was not a good undefeated fighter, and Montel absolutely exposed him, beat him everywhere. 37 strikes to 17, 67 total strikes to 24, 2 of 8 on takedowns. Now, Daniel does go 3 of 7 for 5 minutes and 45 seconds, but Montel was throwing up a submission attempt in the third, which probably won him that round. So Montel just exposes Daniel Marcos, gets the win, and I'm happy to see it. I love him. 6-fight winning streak now, and he will remain ranked at number 15. And I don't know if we're going to bump him up. You know, honestly, I'd bump him over Amanzabi, Marcus McGee, and Kyler Phillips. But I think it's more of a matter of who could he take on next. People are saying loser of Marlon Vera, Mauro Bautista. I think that's what you should do. You can even do a little Rob Font action. Winner of Jose Aldo and Amin Zahabi, Montel Jackson's getting a ranked opponent next. Love to see it. For Daniel Marcos, I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, dude is 32. He just first lost his first ever fight. And out of his 18 career fights, actually 19, he's only ever had 8 finishes. So very boring. I don't know. You could have him, who should he fight? Who's a bantamweight? Who is worthy of Daniel Marcos to fight, honestly? I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters, but he had that cool finish of, who was it, Salmon Oliveira in his debut. I don't know. I'm trying to think of a name that comes to mind. Maybe Jonathan Martinez. Jonathan Martinez, Adrian Yanez, those types of guys. Those are some fights you could do. So that's what you can do for Daniel Marcos. Montel Jackson, he's getting a fun matchup coming up soon, I bet. I mean, I'm sure he'll get another fight or two in for the year. Well, after that matchup, final three, all finishes. Love to see it. First one, Daniel Rodriguez and Santiago Ponzinibbio. And Santiago Ponzinibbio, I swear, all of his fights go the same. He's either losing the first two and wins in round three, or he's winning the first two and loses in round three. And unfortunately, it was the latter, as Daniel Rodriguez not only wins, but knocks him out in round number three. Wow. Just wow. Daniel Rodriguez, 9th career knockout, 13th career finish. I gotta give it to him. Good stuff. Good freaking stuff. And I mean, Santiago in round one, you know, I think Daniel might have won round one, but Santiago definitely won round two, was making it scrappy, was going for takedowns, which is just not something I expected from him. And then round three got going, and he just got clipped, and he was wobbled, and he went down, and the ref had seen enough, and it was kind of like, yeah, that's that. So, yeah, that's all I got to say. You know, Day Rodriguez, good stuff, guy. Good stuff, man. This will be 2 straight wins for him. Kind of somewhat happy. Somewhat happy. I can't really lie. I mean, these two are just such meme fighters. They're just old heads going at it. But Santiago Ponzinibbio, I hope he comes back. I don't know against who. You know, MMA Theory, I'm bringing up that page because I didn't really watch this, so I couldn't get too much of a grasp. But he said Austin Vanderford, of course, Paige VanZant's husband. There's someone you could have him take on. There's always aging welterweight veterans too. I mean, we got Court McGee and Michael Chiesa coming up. How about the winner of that, for goodness sake? Now, for Daniel Rodriguez, it might look a bit different. You know, Muslim Salikov was a name that is obviously brought up. There's also whoever, you know, Kevin Holland and Randy Brown, they're fighting people coming up. Maybe whoever loses, Randy Brown doesn't have a fight booked, but whoever Randy Brown and Kevin Holland match up with, Kevin Holland and Vicente Luque, I would maybe like to see the loser of those matchups taking on Daniel Rodriguez. That's kind of how I view it, if you ask me. So, interesting stuff. It's always entertaining to see a finish. I can't lie, it really does get me going. But yeah, good stuff for Daniel. Actually getting a knockout, which is fun to see. Then we got into the final two fights of the night, and son of a gun, guys, oh my gosh, I should have stuck with Randy Day Ritter, and we changed it to Bo Nickel. I wasn't even rooting for Bo when they were fighting, but yeah, Randy Day Ritter gets it done, 4th career knockout, knocks out Bo Nickel. I mean, I'll tell you, the skill level here was just so evident. Bo Nickel had all the confidence in the world and just didn't translate to the ring. It just didn't. And round one, fairly boring. Bo lands a takedown, controls it for 2 minutes. Rainer's able to hold him up against the fence. There's a total of 7 sitting event strikes between the two of them. Nothing went on. Then round two, I mean, it's all striking. And Rainer's just attacking the body, and it's hurting Bo. And Bo's falling backwards. Then he starts doing the frantic swinging. And on one of the frantic swings, just a beautifully timed knee. Down goes Bo Nickel. Rainer doesn't even need to land a follow-up punch. He walks off. He's victorious. Dude, Rainer Day Ritter, as legit as they come, dude, I'm excited to see him for whoever he fights next. I mean, honestly, I'm pumped. He's number 13. I'm bumping him up to 11. Dare I say even 10. I would love to see him getting a good opponent up next. Maybe Jared Cannonier. Maybe Robert Whittaker. I saw the name Israel Adesanya. He called out Sean Strickland. I'll do any of those fights. Clearly, this guy is as good as advertised from one championship. I mean, kind of like when Jiří Procházka came over, he had some feeler fights going out. But, you know, for Rainer, they were giving him some real feeler fights. And he passed the test, and he hands Bo Nickel his first loss. And he wasn't even too cocky about it. He's just such a jolly little Netherlander guy. He is fun. But Rainer Day Ritter, I saw the names of Paulo Costa, but he's at 12. Roman Deleuze is at 8. Jerry Kenner is at 7. The two names I really believe would be interesting, Adesanya and Sean Strickland. And I think those are both fights both those guys would take, because no one wants to see Adesanya versus Sean Strickland again. No one wants to see that. I want to see Randy Ritter take on either one of those two. More so Sean Strickland, if you ask me, because I want to see him finish Sean Strickland. He's an absolute dog. Randy Ritter, love watching you. Now, as for Bo, I mean, what do you do with Bo Nickel here? What do you do? I mean, who do you match him up with? Who do you match him up with, if you ask me? It's really tricky. It's really tricky. Clearly, Rainer Day Ritter is the ceiling, but Paul Craig is the floor right now. So who's someone in between that we can give Bo Nickel? I don't know if he's ready for another ranked opponent. You know, maybe a grappler to a sense. I don't know. I'm really perplexed. Andre Munoz just lost to Ikram Alkhacarov last weekend. Maybe Andre Munoz for Bo Nickel. You also have, who did, Abus Mamayev beat Michelle Barra? Maybe Michelle Barra. There's just always those unranked middleweights you could test the floor with. But if I'm Bo Nickel, I stay active, I stay humble. And mind you, he said he would be a minus 1,000 favorite against Hamza Chimaev, and he just got knocked out by Rainer Day Ritter. So it's kind of satisfying to see. I am going to say I regret picking Bo Nickel. I should have stuck with Rainer. I love you, Rainer Day Ritter. I'll be excited to see who he fights next. But hey, Bo Nickel loses his first fight. It is what it is. And probably this is for the best. Now he knows what it's like to lose. He's completely humbled. I feel like the kid's kind of had an attitude for a while. And I mean, it's hard not to when you're one of the best collegiate wrestlers of all time. Just, you know, sit down, be humble, as Kendrick said. With that, we got to the main event, ladies and gentlemen. And if you're expecting a war, you'd have been lied to. You would have been very disappointed as Corey Sandhagen just runs through Devin Figueiredo. I mean, I picked Corey, but still to an extent, just brutal. Just utterly brutal. I mean, 54 submission strikes to 6, 92 total strikes to 8. Both men land 2 takedowns, but it's 5 minutes control time for Corey, 31 seconds for Devin. I mean, just domination. Corey Sandhagen using the ground and pound in round 1 and round 2. And, you know, Devin Figueiredo injures his knee, basically gives up, and Corey's just like, yeah, that's that. And he gets a TKO, he gets the performance bonus for this. It's going down as an injury, but basically the ref knew to stop it. Like, the Devin Figueiredo looked a shell of his former self, really showing the age at 37. I don't even know what to do with him. I truly don't. I mean, you got the winner of Mauro Bautista and Marlon Vera. You got Song Yadong. Song Yadong could be a fun fight. You got maybe Jose Aldo if he beats Amin Zahabi. I think you could just run that legend fight there. But Devin Figueiredo really needs to establish what he's still fighting for. I think if he went back to flyweight, he'd be an absolute killer. But at bantamweight, people are just bigger than him. And, you know, when Corey, using his height, is able to get on top and just using his ground and pound with those long, lanky arms, it really worked out. And Corey's going to be remaining ranked at number 4 just because he's lost to number 3 and number 2. But as for what's next, I mean, it's Sean O'Malley. It's Sean O'Malley. And whether Sean O'Malley loses to Merab or whether he beats Merab, it's Sean O'Malley. And I know people are going to say, like, oh, if Sean O'Malley loses to Merab, then we should do Merab versus Corey Sandhagen. I would argue I would rather see Sean O'Malley versus Corey Sandhagen now than when we can get it. Because we kind of, after watching Umar Nurmagomedov and Petr Yan, know the type of fight that Merab will bring to Corey Sandhagen. And is Corey deserving of a title shot? I mean, I'd say so. He's 4-1 in his last 5. Gets his first finish since 2022. Long overdue. He keeps getting injury finishes. For a guy with a crazy highlight, really, just keeps getting these injury finishes with the Song Yadong win, the Devin Figueiredo win. But Corey is super deserving. Really, really would love to see him get a shot. It's just a matter of, will it be Sean O'Malley? And I don't think Sean O'Malley's winning the belt, so I will say Sean O'Malley and Corey Sandhagen will be having a fun fight night main event later in the year. That's my prediction. But UFC Des Moines, overall, a success. I will say a success. You had some fun finishes, and then you just ran into some grappling. I know these Iowans are known for grappling, but I mean, come on. Come on, a little boring if you ask me. But yeah, when I look through events at the end of the year for our end of the year recap, I'll remember this as a positive event as opposed to a bad event. But with that, we look forward to a pay-per-view next week. Look at that. Will I be watching it? Absolutely not. I'll be celebrating my graduation and being probably under the influence of some substances that we won't even mention on the podcast. But Blah Mama, Jack Del Maddalena, just got to be the least hyped pay-per-view of all time. You get Valentina Shevchenko, Man Fiorat. Yay. Finally, Valentina's fighting. Jose Aldo, Zaman Zahabi. Okay. Alexa Grasso and Natalia Silva. Good opportunity for Natalia. And then the only fight I really will be excited to watch, if I do watch a fight, Benoit Saint-Denis, Joel Alvarez. That's going to be a bloodbath. Prelims, Mike Mallett, Charles Radke. Should be a decent welterweight fight. Jessica Andrade, Jasmine Jesse Davicious. Really hope Jasmine wins that. Modestus Bukakis, Ian Quilaba will be interesting. Navajo Sterling, Ivan Ersling. Someone should go to sleep in that one. Marc-Andre Barriou, Bruno Silva. Excellent matchmaking. Daniel Santos, Jiang Lee should be fun. And Bragatona and Beksad Almakan. It's just not really a pay-per-view card. Just doesn't really get me excited for it, if you ask me. But I don't want to be a negative Nelly. We'll touch more on it later in the week. But, yeah, certainly not as good as UFC 314. That's going to be tough to beat. UFC 314 might be impossible to beat. That was such a good card. Such a good card. But, gentlemen, ladies, that's all I got for today's episode. We'll be back Wednesday with our predictions and a little check-in probably with the NBA and NHL. We'll talk about new UFC fights. I really hope there are new UFC fights by then. But the one last thing I did want to add on here is that I read a book recently called A Man Called... I read a book recently, and the book is called A Man Called Av. And it was such an amazing book. It really makes you reflect on life and what's important. And this book is one of the few books that I've ever read that really drew emotions out of me. So if I can leave you with one thing, go read that book and just kind of take it all in for what it is, because it is an amazing story. And I'm going to recommend that book to people for a long time. But guys, hope you like my little analysis. If you see Des Moines, make sure to check out all my social platforms for Zachary Ruger. You know, follow me on Instagram, follow me on TikTok, follow me everywhere. I'm always open. And as always, I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.